Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, June 11th, 2021. Coming up this hour,
Joe Biden and Boris Johnson put tensions on hold during their first meeting.
Climate change looks to be a key focus at today's G7 summit.
A bipartisan Senate group pitches a $1.2 trillion infrastructure deal.
And a push to tax the wealthy picks up steam in Washington.
The New York mayoral race could give Democrats a glimpse at their future. And retroactive sick leave could be coming to New Jersey. I'm Amy Morris. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshire in sports. The Nets lost a low-scoring Game 3 in Milwaukee. The Yankees blew a ninth-inning lead, lost in Minnesota.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are treading water this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures up 2.5 points, Dow futures up 41, NASDAQ futures up 8. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 1.42%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.25% or 18 cents at $70.47 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.1% at $1,898.40 an ounce. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with the G7 summit in Cornwall, England. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and President Joe Biden are putting Brexit tensions aside ahead of the meeting.
It's wonderful to listen to the Biden administration and to Joe Biden, because there's so much that they want to do together with us, from security, NATO, to climate change.
And President Biden is reaffirming Washington's special relationship with Britain. He says the U.S. is ready to work with the U.K. on a number of urgent issues.
We discussed our common goals for driving ambitious global action to address the climate crisis. And the Climate Leaders Summit that I hosted in April was in part about helping drive forward the momentum toward the critical COP26 that the U.K. will host in Glasgow later this year.
And climate change will be a major agenda item when the Group of Seven officially starts their summit today. But there's plenty more to discuss as well. And Bloomberg's James Wilcock has more from Cornwall.
Leaders of the world's largest democracies debate the three C's, COVID, climate change and China. They're expected to pledge a new 1 billion jabs to help vaccinate the world's poorest against COVID. However, the pandemic is far from over, even at the G7, with members of Angela Merkel's security team testing positive for the virus before the summit has even begun. In Cornwall, James Wilcock, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, James, thank you. Back here in the U.S., the push for an infrastructure bill continues. Now a bipartisan group of lawmakers has agreed on a $1.2 trillion 8-year plan. Ann Cates has details from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The proposal by 10 senators, including Republican Mitt Romney and Democrat Joe Manchin, calls for $579 billion in new spending beyond funding Congress is already expected to enact. And the deal pays for modernizing the country's infrastructure without tax increases. The panel issued a statement saying they are discussing their approach with their colleagues in the Senate, along with the White House, in hopes of getting broad support from both parties and taking care of America's infrastructure needs. In Washington, Ann Cates, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Ann. A move to tax the wealthy is also gaining steam in Washington. We get the latest live with Bloomberg's Renita Young.
Karen, two Democrats from both chambers introduced legislation that would place a new surtax on millionaires. The idea could gain traction later this year as Democrats consider new levies on the wealthy. Now, the bill would place a 10% tax on individuals earning more than $1 million and couples making more than $2 million. As a result, lawmakers say federal revenue would increase by $634 billion over a decade. Now, it's worth noting that this plan is not part of the tax hikes proposed by President Biden. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Turning to corporate news now, more fallout this morning from the U.S. approval of Biogen's Alzheimer's drug. A prominent Harvard professor has resigned from the FDA's advisory panel in protest of the move. We get more from Bloomberg's Denise Pellegrini.
Dr. Aaron Kesselheim has resigned in a letter to acting head of the FDA, and he is the third committee member to quit over this approval. Kesselheim calls it probably the worst drug approval decision in recent U.S. history. Evidence the drug works is mixed. two big clinical trials produced conflicting results on whether it could slow cognitive decline. The FDA's approval is conditional. It wants the Cambridge-based drug maker to conduct an additional trial to confirm effectiveness. Kesselheim wanted that additional study done first. Denise Pellegrini, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Denise, thanks. The push to get employees back in person is gathering steam, but one prominent company is relaxing its stance. Now Amazon says it wants corporate employees back in the office at least 3 days a week. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has the story.
It is a softer stance from the company's earlier position that it has an office-centric culture. Amazon said it expects office workers in the U.S., U.K., and several other countries to resume working mostly from the office the week of September 7th. According to the email, quote, like all companies and organizations around the world, we're managing every stage of this pandemic for the first time, learning and evolving as we go. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. The past year has taken real estate prices on a wild ride, and now the president of Blackstone has some advice for property investors. Don't fear a bust anytime soon. John Gray spoke with Bloomberg's David Rubenstein.
I think it's still a pretty good time for real estate, and I'd say it for a couple of reasons. One is the warning signs for real estate are twofold: too much leverage, too much capital, and we don't really have that in the real estate system today. The other, too many cranes, too much building. And we're actually below historic levels in terms of new supply.
Blackstone President John Gray made the comments on Bloomberg Wealth with David Rubenstein. The program debuts on Bloomberg Television July 6th.
Shares of GameStop are stabilizing after yesterday's session, which saw the meme stock lose more than a quarter of its value. Investors dumped the stock after the video game retailer said it planned to sell more shares. It also offered few details about its turnaround strategy. The stock has gained more than 1,000% this year.
Another meme stock's making news. AMC has been given a credit upgrade from S&P Global Ratings. The rating agency boosted the rating for CCC plus from CCC minus. That's a two-notch upgrade that still leaves the company in junk territory. Right now, AMC shares are higher by 3% in early trading. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg. And at 5:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Amy Morris for a look at what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Nathan. The race for New York mayor has become a litmus test for Democrats' clout in the next few years. National progressive figures are backing candidate Maya Wiley. They need a high-profile win to prove their movement has voter support. New York City could give them a new level of credibility. Wiley is currently second in the polls behind Eric Adams. But top of mind for voters appears to be crime. For the first time in years, polls suggest fear of crime could be a prime factor in who voters choose for mayor of New York. Early voting begins tomorrow in the party primaries. Election day is June 22nd, and we'll have live coverage of the vote count as it rolls in that night on Bloomberg Radio. FBI Director Christopher Wray says the Bureau discourages ransomware payments to hacking groups, even as major companies in the past month have had to pay out millions.
It encourages more of this kind of activity. But then there's second, some more practical issues, which sometimes you could pay the ransom and not get your system back.
FBI Director Christopher Wray tells the House Judiciary Committee businesses should work with law enforcement officials. The Oregon House of Representatives took an historic step last night, expelling a Republican member who let violent far-right protesters into the state capitol on December 21st. Republicans voted with Democrats to expel Representative Mike Nierman with a 59-1 vote. Now, earlier, Nierman defended himself to a committee.
I asked the question, why were they angry? They wanted to be part of a process which you intentionally excluded them from.
Nierman was seen on security video opening a door for protesters as lawmakers met in emergency session to deal with economic fallout from the coronavirus pandemic. Retroactive paid leave could be coming to New Jersey workers who missed work because of vaccine side effects or because of quarantining. NJ.com reports a new bill would require employers to provide paid sick leave to workers who need time off related to the coronavirus pandemic. The measure heads to the full Senate. The Republican minority in New Jersey's legislature is criticizing Democratic Governor Phil Murphy for not disclosing his plans for billions of dollars in unexpected revenue. They say the money should go to the pension, taxpayer relief, and other long-term relief from the state's high expenses. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy, thank you. We're coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stanshower.
Good morning, Nathan. Nets and Bucks, two highest scoring teams in the NBA in the regular season. The playoffs are a different story. Tighter defense. Both teams struggled to score in Game 3 in Milwaukee. Both shot under 38%. The Bucks were 6 of 31 on three-pointers. But a late driving layup by Jrue Holiday, a three-point miss at the buzzer from Kevin Durant. Milwaukee won 86-83, cutting the Brooklyn series lead to 2-1. Durant scored 30. Chris Middleton had 35 for Milwaukee, and Giannis Antetokounmpo went for 33. 37 points for Donovan Mitchell in Utah. The Jazz again beat the Clippers and go up 2-0 in that series. Vegas Golden Knights, a fourth straight win over Colorado to take that Stanley Cup playoff series in six games. Aroldis Chapman had been nearly perfect all season. Four wins, 12 saves, one earned run allowed in 23 innings pitched. Chapman went to the mound in Minnesota to protect a 5-3 Yankee lead. Single, home run, single, and then Nelson Cruz at the plate for the Twins.
5-5. Has to deal with first and the pitch, a swing and a fly ball. Left center field and deep. Back it goes. Deep it goes. Twins win. Twins win. The Minnesota Twins win it.
WCCO the call. 7-5 the final. The Cruz homer following one by Josh Donaldson. Giancarlo Stanton and Gio Urshela with Yankee home runs. Red hot Stanton, a three-run shot in the first inning. Rafael Nadal has lost only two of his 103 career French Open matches. One of them was to Novak Djokovic, although when they met 10 months ago in the French final, Nadal won easily. They played today in the semifinals. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. S&P futures right now higher by 2 points. Dow futures up 43. NASDAQ futures up 4.5. 10-year Treasury up 1/32. The yield 1.42% on the 10-year note. Yield on the 2-year 0.14%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather. Intervals of clouds and sun today. Might see an afternoon shower. 75 for the afternoon high. Partly sunny, upper 70s tomorrow. We'll be in the upper 70s with a few showers and storms possible Sunday. Currently 63.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and global stocks are extending a record. U.S. Treasuries are steady. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are little changed to higher, up 2 points. Dow futures up 42. NASDAQ futures up 1. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 1.43%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.2% or 14 cents at $70.43 a barrel. COMEX gold, little change at $18.96.90 an ounce. The euro, 1.2165 against the dollar. British pound, 1.4160. The yen's at 109.50. Bitcoin this morning at $37,180. Today we are watching for a report on consumer sentiment out at 10 o'clock Wall Street time. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy, good morning.
Karen, good morning to you. World leaders from the group of seven industrialized nations today are pivoting from those opening greetings into a session on building back better from COVID-19. While in the U.S., a bipartisan group of lawmakers has agreed on a $1.2 trillion 8-year infrastructure plan without tax increases. The Wall Street Journal says it calls for spending $974 billion over 5 years. The International Monetary Fund is warning about the risks of using Bitcoin for everyday transactions after El Salvador approved the cryptocurrency for day-to-day transactions. In sports, the NBA playoffs, the Nets lose to the Bucks, but still lead the series 2-1. In baseball, the Yankees lose, the Red Sox win, the Giants and Nets play tonight. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Amy, thank you. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak as we get set for day one of the G7 summit in Cornwall, England. Let's go live to Cornwall now. Check in with Bloomberg's executive editor for international government, Rosalind Matheson. Roz, good morning. Thanks for being with us. Have President Biden and UK Prime Minister Johnson sufficiently broken the ice for this 3-day event?
Well, it seems so. They had a very comfortable meeting yesterday. It went for longer than had been anticipated. They had a stroll and looked out over the Cornish coast in the rain. They bantered about their wives with each other, and they spoke about their common interests, of which there are many, and the importance of that relationship in tackling things like climate change, which is dear to both of their hearts, and to managing other tricky relationships, including with Russia and China. And of course, they are both looking ahead to the COP26 summit later this year, which the UK will also be hosting, and where they're both pushing for quite lofty climate goals. So they very much need to portray that image of two leaders very much working together. And of course, not just on that, but also on the pandemic. Joe Biden did push the UK Prime Minister a little bit again on Northern Ireland over Brexit, but it seems that neither of them want that issue to really bubble up and overshadow the rest of the summit.
Now, over the last day or so, we've been talking about the three C's that seem to be on the agenda at the G7: climate, COVID, and China. What do we expect to be the focus today as the summit begins?
Well, very much the focus on the first day will be about the pandemic and also the economic recovery that needs to come from that and how governments need to work together. We've already had a lot of the announcements. We got the draft communique, of course, which shows that nations will commit to funding an extra 1 billion doses of vaccine to be shared around the world with the goal of ending the pandemic for good by the end of next year. So there'll be a lot of discussion about how that's going to work, which nations are going to contribute, what can nations up their game even further on that. And then a lot of discussion around the collaboration around the economic recovery, a global tax scheme for one thing, but also at what point are they going to have to turn the taps off on spending and each kind of grapple with the questions around tax increases.
Now, we also saw an announcement from the White House overnight about a major reallocation from the International Monetary Fund. Tell us more about that and what kind of impact that could have.
Well, yeah, the idea again is how do you redirect global resources to the places where they're really needed? Because, of course, the U.S. is not the only one. The European nations as well have come under criticism for hoarding vaccines, for not doing enough of the heavy lifting economically to support poorer countries through the pandemic. And the idea is how can you reallocate resources around the world to show that it's not just talking about supporting the global order, it's actually about showing that they're doing so financially, because there's been, again, those concerns that a lot of countries are going to be very much left behind in the long run economically from this. So how can you enable them to access funds and support as they come out into the recovery phase? So it's packaged up with the idea, again, of showing very much that Europe and the U.S. are leading together on the world stage, and that they're really propping up that global order in the face of the rise of other countries like China.
Now, when it comes to tackling the climate crisis, Roz, we saw this major push from global investors yesterday trying to get the G7 to make even more of a commitment when it comes to reducing global emissions and that sort of thing. Is that factoring into the discussions, this push from the investment side to get a greater commitment?
Well, very much so, both on that side and also on the climate financing side, and how much governments are willing to put up or can afford to put up in this time. But one of the very interesting things is this debate. They're still haggling over the communique, and one of the things on that is how much or how quickly to push each economy to reduce diesel in cars and to push truly towards of carbon neutrality in the auto space, because that's a very big one for a lot of big companies around the world. But investors are really saying this needs to happen. And so what you're seeing is governments and investors sort of echoing each other on that front, but concern at the same time about if you push too quickly, do you really damage some of your marquee companies in the auto space in the process? So there's some arguing that's still going on behind the scenes over the wording of that one.
Only about 30 seconds left here. What's the trust level from the rest of the G7 for the U.S.?
Well, rising, but needing to show proof of life, perhaps one could say, because, of course, there's relief that Joe Biden's a very different kind of president. But at the same time, the damage the U.S. did arguably to its reputation globally does need more than words. They're here saying to Joe Biden, we need to see some meat on the table. You need to show us that you mean business.
Rosalind Matheson, executive editor for international government for Bloomberg News, part of our team of correspondents covering the G7 in Cornwall, England. Roz, thanks for being with us this morning. Looking forward to more of your coverage throughout the weekend. Looking ahead to the market open on Wall Street, little change for equity futures. S&P futures up 2 points, Dow futures up 43, NASDAQ futures up 1 point. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, mix of sun and clouds today. Maybe an afternoon shower going up to 75 degrees. Upper 70s tomorrow and the next day. Might see some showers and storms by Sunday. Currently 63 in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks around the world are on track for a fourth week of gains as world leaders meet in England. The Group of Seven summit marks Joe Biden's first trip overseas as president. Yesterday, he had a friendly meeting with U.K. Prime Minister Boris Johnson, but today could present more friction. Bloomberg's Guy Johnson has more from Cornwall, England.
The Trump administration changed the attitude here in Europe towards the United States. And as a result, there is this view that the U.S. needs to not only talk the talk, but walk the walk. They want some concrete measures from the Biden administration. And there is frustration that the Biden administration is acting unilaterally on a number of issues. There is frustration that the Biden administration is putting pressure on Nord Stream 2 and meddling in European energy politics. So there is frustration. This is not going to be as easy day as it was yesterday.
Bloomberg's Guy Johnson says the G7 agenda will likely be dominated by COVID-19, climate change, and China.
Back here in the U.S., the push for an infrastructure bill continues. Sources say a bipartisan group of 10 senators has agreed to pitch a $1.2 trillion 8-year spending package to the White House. Taxing the wealthy is also on the agenda in Washington, and we get the latest on that live with Bloomberg's Renita Young.
Nathan, two Democrats from both chambers introduced legislation that would place a new surtax on millionaires. The idea could gain traction later this year as Democrats consider new levies on the wealthy. The bill would place a 10% tax on individuals earning more than $1 million and couples making more than $2 million a year. As a result, lawmakers say federal revenue would increase by $634 billion over a decade. And by the way, this plan is not part of the tax hikes proposed by President Biden. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Renita, thank you. Turning to corporate news now, Amazon appears to be changing its tune when it comes to working from home. The company says it wants corporate employees to return to the office at least 3 days a week this fall.
And shares of GameStop are on the rise this morning after yesterday's session, which saw the meme stock lose more than a quarter of its value.
S&P futures are a little changed this morning, up a point. Dow futures up 39, NASDAQ futures down 2. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury down 0.32, yield 1.43%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.1% or 10 cents at $70.39 a barrel, and COMEX gold down 0.1% or $2.40 at $18.94.10 an ounce. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
5:33 on Wall Street. Amy Morris has more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Amy?
Nathan, early voting begins tomorrow in New York City's primary elections, and the number one issue on voters' minds appears to be crime. While violence has not yet reached the historic highs of the 1990s, candidates still find themselves balancing talk of police reform with promises to not let New York backslide into a crime capital. Election Day is June 22nd, and we'll have live coverage of the vote count as it rolls in that night on Bloomberg Radio. New legislation would allow New Yorkers to have their criminal records automatically sealed for for nonviolent parole violations, and they could avoid jail time. The New York Senate and Assembly passed the Less is More Act, which would largely eliminate the practice of incarcerating people for technical parole violations. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler of New York took the FBI to task on Capitol Hill yesterday, saying the FBI is making a mistake by lumping all ideological extremism into one and needs to start looking within its own ranks for white supremacy sympathizers.
It is past time for the FBI to begin what the Department of Homeland Security and the Pentagon have already begun, a full internal review of white supremacist membership within the Bureau.
New York Democrat Jerry Nadler chairs the committee where FBI Director Wray told lawmakers that while ideological threats of violence are a top concern, his agency will not go after those who exercise their rights to peacefully protest. Meanwhile, a warning from Wray about ransomware. He had advice for businesses that are victims of ransomware attacks.
It is our policy. It is our guidance from the FBI that companies should not pay the ransom.
FBI Director Christopher Wray tells the House Judiciary Committee paying the ransom encourages more attacks, and you might not get your system back anyway. Two partners at an equity research firm were charged by U.S. prosecutors with using tips on planned health care mergers to reap millions of dollars in illegal profits. Tomer Feingold and Dov Malnick were charged with conspiracy and securities fraud. Prosecutors say they're both part of an international insider trading ring from 2013 to 2017. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Amy. 5:35 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. The Nets had won their last four playoff games, had averaged 126 points a game in those four. Last night, Game 3 in Milwaukee, the Nets scored just 11 points in the first quarter, only 18 in the fourth. The Bucks weren't scoring much either. They trailed by one late in the game.
15 seconds to play. The Bucks will play for one. Holiday to the rim. Scores! 84-83 Bucks. 11.4 to play. On a night when he has struggled, Holiday comes up with the biggest shot of the night.
Bucks radio Drew Holiday had been 3 for 13. Milwaukee won at 86-83, led by Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who combined for 68 points, only 18 from the rest of the team. Kevin Durant led Brooklyn with 30. The Nets' best shooter, Joe Harris, shot 1 for 11. It's now 2-1 Nets with Game 4 Sunday. Utah's sixth straight playoff win. They beat the Clippers, lead 2-0. Vegas Golden Knights have only been in existence for 4 years. They've reached the Stanley Cup Conference Final in 3 of the 4. They beat Colorado, will now play Montreal. The Islanders have Game 1 at Tampa Bay on Sunday afternoon. The Yankees have not had a loss like this all season. Giancarlo Stanton gave them the lead. 3-run homer in the first inning in Minnesota. The Yanks led 5-3 in the ninth, brought in Aroldis Chapman. He had been automatic all season. Chapman faced 4 batters, gave up 4 hits, 4 runs. A Josh Donaldson 2-run homer tied the game. A Nelson Cruz 2-run shot won it for Minnesota in stunning fashion, 7-5. French Open semifinals today, including Rafael Nadal against Novak Djokovic, their 58th career meeting. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Thanks, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Changing a centuries-old image isn't easy. New York-based Brooks Brothers will try by adding more relaxed shirts, suits, and bottoms. That's alongside the new men's and women's athleisure lines, like hoodies and sweatpants. The company will still use its golden fleece logo, but it's adding a mascot named Henry the Sheep. The New York State Senate has voted to pass right-to-repair legislation. It could force Apple and other companies to make it easier for customers to fix their devices. The bill requires manufacturers to make repair information available to repair providers and consumers. New Jersey expects revenue to be around $5 billion higher than forecast over 2 fiscal years. Gross income tax, sales tax, and corporation business tax revenues are all projected to hit historic highs. Connecticut expects $800 million will be left over this fiscal year. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm
Gina Cervetti, and for WFLA in Orlando, I'm reporting that Netflix is taking a page from Disney, launching an online store to sell merchandise based on its popular shows.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about United Airlines putting money into flying taxi company Archer Aviation.
I'm Caroline Hepcom, Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting live from Cornwall about the G7 summit. Can these wealthy nations bandy together on climate change, COVID, and China?
I'm Jeff Bellinger, and on WIOD in Miami, I'm reporting a Bitcoin conference held in Miami last week may have been a COVID super spreader event.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Domino's chief financial officer is leaving for a British brewer and pub company.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. We're also watching meme stocks once again. AMC Entertainment's getting a boost after S&P said the company has a path to a sustainable capital structure. More from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
The movie theater operator has cashed in on its meme stock status to raise some $1.25 billion through equity offerings in recent months. S&P analysts say that if AMC uses its cash to pay down debt, refinances expensive debt incurred during the pandemic, and sees improved theater attendance, it has, quote, a path to a sustainable capital structure. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, the University of Michigan issues its nationwide consumer sentiment index this morning. Economists anticipate a modest increase. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
In May, the consumer sentiment index retreated as families contended with rising prices triggered by post-pandemic demand, supply and demand. Looking ahead, Bloomberg Economics says inflation concerns will remain elevated, but higher for the year ahead, not the longer haul. On Thursday, the government reported May consumer prices rose 5% on a year-over-year basis, the most since 2008. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, slight chance for an afternoon shower to end the week. We'll get up to 75 degrees today, upper 70s for the weekend with a chance for a few showers or storms by Sunday. Currently 62 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks are extending a record, and U.S. Treasuries are pretty steady. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are a little changed this morning. They're up about 2 points. Dow futures are up 48. NASDAQ futures down 3. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 1.44%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.2% or 13 cents at $70.42 a barrel. COMEX gold is little change, down 90 cents at $18.95.50 an ounce. The euro, 1.2160 against the dollar. British pound, 1.4156, and the yen, 109.53. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Amy Morris with more on what's going on around the world. Amy.
Karen, at the G7, world leaders moved closer to a joint plan to tax tech giants, push back against Russia and China, and give new life to the global COVID-19 vaccine campaign. This, as a bipartisan group of senators is eyeing an infrastructure deal with $579 billion in new spending as part of a $1 trillion total package. The senators call their tentative agreement a realistic compromise framework. The Justice Department, under former President Trump, evidently seized data from the accounts of at least two members of the House Intelligence Committee in 2018 as part of its response to the Russia investigation. The New York Times reports prosecutors subpoenaed Apple for that data. In sports, in the NBA playoffs, the Nets lose to the Bucks, but still lead the series 2-1. In baseball, the Yankees lose, the Red Sox win, the Giants and Nets play tonight. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Amy. Thank you. It is coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Looking ahead to the start of the G7 summit in Cornwall, we're joined from Washington this morning by Greg Vallier, Chief U.S. Policy Strategist at AGF Investments. Greg, good as always to get your insights this morning. And of course, we've been talking for the last day or so about the three C's on the agenda at the G7, COVID, climate, and China. What could we see in terms of a fourth C, commitments?
Yeah, I think the commitments, Nathan, and good morning, will be vague. I think that the more important thing will be just the general sense of goodwill after the last 4 years with Donald Trump. And I think that's important. But, you know, a commitment, for example, to tax tech companies, well, that's a treaty. And I'm not sure that the United States Senate has two-thirds of the vote to approve a treaty. So some of these commitments will take a while to actually occur.
How much of this is meant for a domestic audience back at home for President Biden reasserting the U.S. on the world stage? Does that make a difference politically for him?
Yeah, I really think it does. I think that there'll be goodwill, or already is, between Biden and Boris Johnson. There will be between Biden and Merkel and Macron. So I do think that's important after the train wreck that we had for 4 years.
We also heard the president yesterday lay out his plan for vaccine distribution around the world, pretty much asserting that the U.S. is going to provide half of what the G7 is expected to announce in terms of a billion vaccine doses around the world. What does that say about how the president wants to reposition the U.S. in the world?
Yeah, he wants to reposition the U.S. as a leader, but let's be cynical for a minute. One of the factors is that we are not vaccinating many people anymore in the U.S.
And that could be a problem just in terms of the global pandemic, in terms of what?
Well, I think that it's a sign that he's not going to have his goals met by the 4th of July. There's plenty of vaccines available. So if there's a surplus of vaccines, he can afford to be a little more generous.
Do you think that the president will be able to get the rest of the G7 leaders behind his push to take a more aggressive tack against China? That seems to be a real goal for this president.
Absolutely. If there's a surprise here, Nathan, I think it is how aggressive Biden wants to be with the Chinese. There's a lot of resentment in Washington over China's lack of transparency. And of course, suspicion is rising as to where the virus actually originated. So yes, I do think that there will be, in private, I think there'll be a lot of grumbling about China. In terms of any kind of real action, I don't sense a will in Western Europe to go after China. Their bigger concern, of course, is Putin.
In the time we have left here, Greg, how much action do you expect on an infrastructure deal? We heard a bipartisan group of senators come out with yet another proposal. What do you think of it? What are its chances?
It's a start. I mean, the dollar amount, if you want to say it's $1.2 trillion, that's close to what Biden might accept. Two problems. Number one is that the progressive left feels that's way too little and inadequate. Number two, how do you pay for it? They're saying you're going to pay for it with a gasoline tax or by clawing back money from states that have gotten aid in COVID bills. Both of those are non-starters. So I think paying for it is going to be, not surprisingly, the big obstacle.
Although it's interesting, isn't it, that in the past, indexing the gasoline tax to inflation was something that Democrats used to be in favor of. Now it's the Republicans that are arguing for it.
Yes, and Joe Biden has promised he would not have a tax hike on anyone making under $400,000. So I think a gasoline tax is going to be very hard for him to accept.
All right, Greg Valliere, AGF Investments, Chief U.S. Policy Strategist. We'll leave it there for now. But thank you, as always, for your insights, not just on the infrastructure negotiations as they continue in Washington, but as we get set for the G7 summit in Cornwall. Karen.
Nathan, it's 5:53 on Wall Street. Time now for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Today, we're looking at workers' lawsuits against employers who are mandating COVID-19 vaccinations. Suits have been filed against Houston Methodist Hospital, the Los Angeles Unified School District, a sheriff's department in North Carolina, and a detention center in New Mexico. Complaints say the vaccines cannot be mandatory because they're only authorized for emergency use. For more on the issue, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Eric Feldman, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School.
How compelling is this lawsuit filed against Houston Methodist Hospital?
It's not much of a lawsuit from a legal point of view, I don't think, but it certainly expresses the frustration or anger that we've seen, I think, for quite a while in the anti-vaccination community that's really come out in full force, I think, during COVID-19. So I take the lawsuit not so much as articulating a set of really complicated legal issues, though it does manage to raise one issue, but much more a sign of the distress and distrust of the medical establishment, as we've been seeing really over and over again over the past 15 months or so.
What are they alleging is the basis for their claim that the hospital shouldn't be able to tell them to get vaccinated?
So the claim they spend the most time on is, unfortunately, I think from their perspective, the one that's likely to get the least sympathy from any court that's actually focused on the law. And that's the claim that they are basically the same as people who would be subject to medical experimentation. And the analogy that's drawn very sharply in the lawsuit is that this is akin to the medical experimentation by the Nazis on those who were in the concentration camps. And of course, those notorious medical experiments, which were brought to light during the Nuremberg trials. Here, the lawyers are claiming what we have is a group of individuals who are being forced against their will to subject themselves to this untested vaccine. And that's just wrong scientifically, and I think it's wrong morally, and it's wrong legally.
And what's one of the stronger claims made in the lawsuit?
The stronger claims is whether or not the fact that the COVID-19 vaccines that are currently authorized to be used in the U.S. are authorized under emergency use authorization, whether the EUA status of these vaccines means that they cannot be mandated. And it gets into really the regulatory weeds here, but there's a section of the regulations about the emergency use authorization that discusses the requirement that people who are receiving a vaccine approved under emergency use authorization have to be told about the consequences of accepting and not accepting, et cetera. And that's been read by some, and not inappropriately, as suggesting that EUA vaccines cannot be mandated. And others say there's really nothing about the language that would mean that mandates were illegal or inappropriate. And so that's where the legal fight is.
That's Eric Feldman, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures, little change this morning, up 2 points. Dow futures up 47. NASDAQ futures are little change. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury down 0.2 seconds. The yield 1.43%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.25%. It's at $70.45 a barrel. Still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, a check on the business headlines and all the news you need to start your day. This is Bloomberg.